The weekend is near, and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
This is the glorious return of the Fox Footy Podcast. And as we return, we're in the midst of a fascinating fortnight of AFL football. Some shocks that have surged into premiership contention early, and some were a little bit surprised about by how low and how poorly they've performed. We're here to wrap it all up ahead of round three and after round two on the Fox Footy Podcast. G'day everyone, I'm Ben Waterworth, and it is a pleasure to have two of the finest journos at Fox Footy in the Fox Footy Podcast bunker to have a look back at round two. Firstly, let's welcome senior AFL reporter...
Peter Senior.
Thomas Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Max. Great to be here. And we've had a few Twitter questions coming through over the summer.
Yes.
Saying, where is the Fox Footy podcast? Mm. It is a delight to be back.
Yes.
And even better to hear your dulcet tones.
It's even better to also to hear the dulcet tones of Chief WWE FoxSports.com.au correspondent Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
I'm not the one going over to WrestleMania, though. It's one of our Sydney colleagues, unfortunately. But I will still take that. Thank you for having me again.
I can feel the bitterness in the air, Max.
I'm Chief Esports correspondent, too.
Yes, Esports. What's Esports?
Award nominated, I think you'll find.
How do you spell Esports? No, that's another can of worms won't open up. Match committee big call. So a player that must be dropped or selected from the VFL or coming back from injury early. Tommy, starting with you ahead of round three.
Yeah, then St Kilda need to select Luke Dunstan, Ben, and they need to select him based on this performance against North Melbourne, which was insipid. Now, Alan Richardson described it as incredibly disappointing.
Oh,
but
Alan, welcome to the show.
Straight from 360 last night, actually. Yes. No, I actually think Richo understates a lot of things, as many coaches do. But this was a shocking performance on Good Friday. They need more hardness around the ball. I think Dunstan has limitations in some respects. I think he understands that. Probably the club understands that. He's not necessarily overly quick. He's not a beautiful kick. But he is a first-round draft pick. Yep. And he was a Rising Star nomination. He's signed on to the end of 2019 last year. They need to play him. He needs to be in this team because he finds the footy, and that's something they struggled to do against the Kangaroos on Good Friday.
We'll talk a little bit about the Saints a little bit later on, though, Maxie, but he would be a handy addition into the Saints line.
This is the club that needs strengths right now. This is a club that is just sort of mediocre at everything. They need some strengths.
Yeah, find something.
Mm. Your match committee big call, please, Max.
I think it's the other big Victorian story of the round, which was the Western Bulldogs. Mm. And I think a few people have mentioned it already, but Mitch Wallace, what are you doing in the VFL or in the practice matches? Wherever you are, Mitch, come back. They need some sort of experience in this side. We've talked about how young they are, how inexperienced they are. And we'll go deeper into why and how and what's going on there, but he just seems like a no-brainer to bring in for me.
It was fascinating on the couch last night, Paul Roos talking about they need to go back to basics, the Bulldogs, and select about 13 to 15 players that he knows will naturally do the grunt work, that Luke Beveridge knows will do the grunt work, and Mitch Wallace is undoubtedly in those 13 to 15 players, and then put some structure around that, whether it's finding an extra key forward or defender, whatever it is.
But the problem is you can't do that all at once. If we think they're missing 7 or 8 players from their best team, which I think many pundits think they are, at least based on the 2016 grand final side, then you can't just do it all at once. And I think Luke Beveridge will be very resistant to make those changes and just go bang like that. He's got a plan, clearly, to play people on form. And at the moment, there's not a lot of guys... Well, there's no proper VFL games to put their name up and get themselves in the team.
Well, you mentioned some interesting stuff there around... Well, we talked about the Dogs and the Saints and where they might be, which leads us into the future award-winning power rankings.
Oh.
Certainly a fan favourite on foxfooty.com.
Is this a new segment, Ben?
It is a new segment. So, Maxie...
Power ranking.
There's the bumper.
Each week goes through the power rankings. So this is not the ladder. So we rank teams from 1 to 18, opinion-based. So it's basically getting rid of the ladder, Max.
Almost fixing the ladder in a way, if you want to look at it that way. You have your biases of the ladder. You have who you've played. You have with two games, your percentage is all out of whack based on one poor game or one really good game. And this attempts to fix all of that.
Right, well, who's better, is it?
Who is actually the best teams right now?
As it stands right now. So take us through 1 to 18 after round 2.
So right now, the top 5 or 6, probably hard to disagree with. Actually, number 1 this week on the opinions of the Fox Footy Commentariat, Port Adelaide.
Power!
Up at number 1, GWS, Adelaide, Richmond, Sydney, making out your top five. They're probably the clear contenders for me right now. That makes a lot of sense. And you've got a few teams that are really interesting. Geelong, Hawthorn, Melbourne and Essendon from 6th to 9th lurking around. They could jump up. They could make that performance that really shows that they're that good. Then you've got Gold Coast and West Coast, 10th and 11th in the power rankings, which Gold Coast, they've won their two games, have been against lowly opposition, but have looked a lot better, and it seems like they're getting their defence all in order. Whereas West Coast, they're 1-1, but having Nick Nat back is really showing how good this team can be.
You're not saying Gold Coast will finish 10th. You're saying right now they are the 10th best team.
Based on the opinions of the voters in the power rankings.
Yes.
My individual ballot may have been lower than that.
Yes.
So we collate all of those opinions. Last week they were 16th, for example. So they've jumped up to 10th in most estimations. And then
this is where it gets interesting for mine from here.
So bottom seven, Collingwood, Fremantle, St Kilda. Fremantle winning. Collingwood and St Kilda are still really struggling at the moment. And then your bottom four, North Melbourne, Brisbane, Carlton, the Western Bulldogs dead last.
Yeah, and
How crazy is that?
Where they're at the moment, aren't they? Two bad losses. They are in a lot of trouble, the Western Bulldogs, and they're not going to finish. I don't think they're going to finish 18th. If they do finish 18th, well, I don't think they're going to have the same coach next year.
No.
But I think many people predicted them to bounce back in a similar way to what Hawthorn did after their grand final or premiership hangover. I think a lot of people think, oh, the Dogs will bounce back. They've got Bontempelli. Easton Wood's a very good player, but nothing is really working for them, and that is reflected in those power rankings, well, Maxie.
Yes.
Let's have a look, now that we've mentioned both the Dogs and the Saints, who's in a... According to the power rankings, the Dogs are in a worse position. They're dead last, and St Kilda's, you know, half a dozen spots ahead of them. But is that really where it sits at the moment? Are the Western Bulldogs, after round two, at the moment, are they in a worse position than St Kilda at the moment, Tom?
No, they're not in a worse position than St Kilda because they've got some stars and St Kilda doesn't. So their ceiling is higher than St Kilda's. I still see the Western Bulldogs, if they're both teams play their best, the Bulldogs beat St Kilda and the Bulldogs finish higher than St Kilda. The problem at the moment at the Kennel is that they're so far below their best, it's impossible to imagine them doing so. But I think even if St Kilda play their best, the pressure will be off the charts, but the talent, as far as we can see, aside from a couple of players, isn't really there. Who's going to finish All-Australian for St Kilda?
Not at the moment.
Carlisle could, maybe. Maybe not. Billings could, maybe down the track.
On a half-forward flank.
Half-forward flank.
Yeah, but he needs the team to improve for him to have that opportunity in a way.
There's not many. I still think the Bulldogs probably have three or four, maybe even five potential All-Australians.
I think we're still looking at the Dogs wrong.
How do you think we should see them?
I think we need to realise that they are rebuilding. They have not said the word rebuilding, but they are rebuilding.
Well, their team on the weekend was the youngest out of all 18 teams. Yeah.
And I think you look at the way that they have gone through the last two trade periods. They have had a really weird two trade periods. Their recruiting has been absolutely bizarre. Yeah. I mean, you start with the Travis Cloke inclusion coming in. Sure, that's maybe a bit of a top-up. Just see what he's got for one season and ends up doing okay. But trading out Jake Stringer, I almost think that's not as bad as people thought it was because he hasn't looked terrific at Essendon. Maybe he's just dropped off as a player and it's a lose-lose.
Yeah, he's just not the player that he was, and he's definitely not a midfielder because he doesn't get the ball.
So what's the Dogs' plan here? They seem to have looked at themselves in the 2016 flag year and gone, well, we finished sixth on the ladder, right?
Yeah.
And we make the grand final. We win the grand final with the best month of footy this club's ever put together. And that was unsustainable. They played at a rate during that season, over that season, that was very good.
Mainly
not
the
elite. Yes,
I think they know they pinched it, don't they?
Yeah, I think they do.
And is that there's an argument, you can't pinch a flag. Well, you know, in the definition of the word pinch, you can't actually pinch a flag. But, you know,
if you have possession of the flag, you do not own its premiership. Yeah.
You can get more lucky than others. And clearly they had an unbelievable final series. But a bigger sample size is the 22 weeks that preceded it. And they finished sixth. And that's probably where they were.
And the 23 rounds that preceded whatever the opposite of preceded is, came after it. Yeah. You know, for 2017, they were a middle-of-the-pack team that has gotten younger. That is the profile of a team that is not going to contend for the eight. That's a profile of the team that's rebuilding. This is a profile of the team that wants to try and start back up again with that star power base that you spoke about when we were talking about all Australian possibilities.
One thing they can't do is have administrative errors like Jack Redpath.
That was bad. That was bad, Thomas.
Well, it's bad. And the Dogs will say, we were going to select Redpath anyway. But it's the optics, and we talk about the optics a bit on this podcast. It doesn't look good, Ben.
No, and Chris Grant admitted that on the weekend as well, said it was a failure.
Just
that was just a bad stuff up. So, interesting point on the couch on Monday night from Gary Lyon, hinting whether Luke Beveridge may have lost the players. Because a couple of years ago, he sold something to the playing group and they bought in the playing group. And Gary said on the couch on Monday night, Tom, on your show, which you would do a fine job on, that Luke Beveridge might have lost the players at the moment.
We don't know. And you know what? Probably no one will know until well after the fact.
Yeah.
If he doesn't coach next year or well down the line. And I'm sure that no coach in the AFL is loved by every single one of his players on the list.
No.
That's impossible because you have half the list that's not in the team at any given time. But there are bad signs at the Bulldogs at the moment that suggest that whatever his message is, isn't getting through to the players. Now, Luke Beveridge and I, we don't have a great little history, Ben.
Yes. So I was going to bring that up, and I figured that this is relevant to this situation. Because so Luke Beveridge comes out at a press conference after Tom reports that Luke Dalhouse, among others, were on the trade table during the trade period.
Primarily Luke Dalhouse,
and just completely denies that, says it's not true, and says that he spent half a day talking to his players before round one, just before round one, keep in mind, spending half a day saying, no, it's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
Media reports come out after that. Everyone's sort of agreeing with what, Tom, you have reported.
Well,
what does this say about Beveridge that he feels the need to commit that much media capital to come out and talk about this issue?
Well, there's two schools of thought. The first school of thought is that he's on edge and the club is on edge and that any bad news, they're going to try to shoot down and actually go on the offensive. And I'm not saying I'm not saying it's to the same level as Lance Armstrong, but do you remember when Lance Armstrong...
Too soon.
No, listen to this. When Lance Armstrong was done for drugs and media came after him and told the truth, he didn't just defend. He actually went on the offensive. And sometimes the best form of defense is offense.
Yeah. It's to run down the wicket and try and hit him over long off, Tom.
Exactly right. Now, what I wrote about Dalhouse was correct. And and it might be proven correct in the future. It might not. Who knows? He might have a good year and stay at the Dogs.
It was right at the time.
It was right at the time, yes, in last year's trade period. But for him to get so offensive in that situation just tells me that there's been a few triggers within that club well over the summer that they don't like. Now, the other school of thought is that he has every right to come out and say what he doesn't believe because he might actually not know what's gone on in deep discussions.
Might have been a list management only thing.
And you've got to remember that Dalrymple and McCartney are no longer there. So he might not have been in some meetings with them and some clubs and some player managers and who knows. But it is an intriguing situation, the Beveridge v players, because Beveridge says he loves the players, but the message from the players to Beveridge is not as accommodating as you would think.
Just one before we get to David King talking about Geelong and Hawthorn on Monday. We touched on the Saints a little bit. The question that keeps on permeating around on social media and from commentators, and certainly in my mind, is has St Kilda overrated its list?
Yes, absolutely. They think they have 6, 7, 8 potential A graders. I would argue they've got 4 potential A graders, maybe.
Potential
A graders, yes. I mean,
and in that scenario, you know that not all of those are going to hit their potential.
No, I think they have overrated their list. They went to the draft a few years ago. They had this thing in 2013, Ben and Max, which we've spoken about before, which is the road to 2018.
Yeah.
And in this plan, devised by Chris Pelkin and overseen by Alan Richardson and Meat Baines and Matt Finnis, they wanted to make finals in 2017, top 4 by 2018, and therefore challenging for a premiership 2018 and beyond. They approached the draft to do so, and the biggest thing about this road to 2018 document was they wanted a big fish.
Yep.
And they haven't been able to land a big fish.
Nope.
And if you don't have gun players, you can't win a flag. I don't care who you are. Bulldogs, Richmond, when they won the flag, they had gun players at the time.
It's as basic as that. It's a very common model you'd see around the sporting world. You get your cheap young player base of talented players who are going to come through and then supplement that with the best players at the top. And they just were not those players to get. All those players did not want to come to St Kilda this past trade period.
The biggest fish in the AFL at the moment is Tom Lynch. Is St Kilda planning to make... Well, and Drew Jones has reported this a couple of months ago, that St Kilda thinks it's right in the race for Tom Lynch.
Yeah.
Is that the player that they should be chasing hard at the moment, Tom?
I think they should be trying to chase everyone and, pardon the pun, casting the net wide so that they can get any fish that wants to go there, because no one, based on the past 2 years, actually wants to get to St Kilda. So there's Tom Lynch, and I think they really want Andrew Gaff, and understandably so, because he really suits what they need, a skillful, slightly outside player. They need that. And Rory Sloane was a St Kilda player as a kid. They need anyone they can get, Max.
Yeah, they absolutely need to get someone. If they don't, that plan is amok, and you wonder what their time frame is after this, because we've all been building up with Alan Richardson for a while and saying, oh, it's all right, we give him the time to fill out this plan, see out this plan. And if it doesn't happen, when is he contracted till?
End of 2019, he re-signed over the summer, which I found intriguing.
Good timing for him.
Good timing for him. They didn't want the pressure on him, which is understandable. But the pressure's on him regardless. If they continue to play like they did on Good Friday, they just need this big fish. They haven't been able to get one. And I don't know whether that says something about Seaford or the coaches or the fact Rewalt and Montagna have left. So who is the captain going to this other player's house to try to get someone on board? It just hasn't worked.
So before we bring King in, I just wanted to make one point about that. We talk about the power rankings and we talk about the actual ladder. And usually the ladder at this point of the season doesn't have that much impact. It doesn't really represent a huge amount because of how variable everything is. But let me read to you the bottom six of the current ladder.
Yep.
St Kilda, Fremantle, Brisbane, Collingwood, Carlton, Western Bulldogs. None of those teams are playing finals.
No, that's true. Well, Norton 2 is some sort of sign. I think two teams since 2010 have played finals after being Norton 2.
And it was two Sydney teams.
Oh, was it really?
It was the Swans in 2014 and last year. So you have to be that level of consistent to do it. I'd add in North Melbourne as a team that's not going to make it, who's above that bottom six right now. Gold Coast are 2-0. Maybe they're going to show something once they play a good team. That might be eight teams that I am happy to rule out of the top eight contention right now.
Well, it is round two, but you know,
and we haven't even mentioned Paddy McCartan yet either.
No, we haven't. No, and he was okay on Friday.
Can I say something? One thing on him.
Yes.
Very small.
Yes.
I don't blame Paddy McCartan whatsoever. It's not his fault he was taken pick one, but in time we might look back and just think to ourselves, St Kilda has made the biggest error in recent memory. Ooh. Right there.
No, really?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not Paddy McCartan's fault because he's the player he is and he will become, I think, a good forward. Yeah. And he might be Tom Hawkins, who, remember, had a really good window for a couple of years and isn't the player that he was a few years ago. But, geez, they've missed out on some really, really good players with that prize number one selection.
You're saying he's the Bowie to the Michael Jordan? That's the sort of situation.
That'll do. Sort of mid-90s basketball.
Derm was excellent on Friday, actually, talking about Paddy McCartan and his sort of under-18s mentality when it comes to manning up one-on-one against
that
defenders.
That was very, very good.
Well,
wasn't
Derm at his very best.
Type 1 diabetic. I got to respect him for that.
Yes, good on you, Maxie.
Man him.
Well done, Maxie. So the Saints and the Dogs, unfortunately, in the headlines for the wrong reasons. But the game between the Cats and the Hawks was in the headlines all for the right reasons on Monday. And a man that was all over that thrilling contest in the Fox Footy Lab was our chief analyst at Fox Footy and, of course, the dual premiership kangaroo, David King. Hello, Kingy.
Thanks for the invite, guys. Wrapped to be on. What a great game it was. I think that when you look at these two teams, they just find ways to stay in the contest. And often they're unconventional. And often it's from the coach's box. You know, Alistair Clarkson orchestrated some sort of victory yesterday, didn't he?
Well, he absolutely did. And in the lab afterwards, yourself and Jono were big on composure and the composure that Hawthorn showed in those frantic final 2 minutes. And it came back to their forward pressure, it seemed. Like a couple of dump kicks from Geelong, particularly from Joel Selwood at the end, led to the Jared Roughead behind. So that composure that we've known from Hawthorn seemed to be back on Monday.
Yeah, well, I think in those close games, when you play the 2 minutes at the end, it's often the shorter kicks that do the damage and often the angled kicks, the lateral kicks that do the damage because everyone goes into panic mode and just wants to dump the ball and get meterage, get, you know, 40, 50-metre kicks. But that's where the loose men like to park themselves. They don't want anything quick coming towards their defensive end. So it's the short kicks that do the damage. If you ever look at the last half a dozen disposals by the Hawks, with the exception of the ball driving in deep from Isaac Smith to the goal mouth, trying to rush a point, really, they were all short or lateral. And that's just coaching, that's just training, and that's just experience, you know. They've got these players that know how to win games of football. The Cats have got a whole host of young kids in there that are still just finding their feet. I reckon Joel Selwood would want that last dump kick again. He had Tim Kelly, who will be the best first-year player in the competition this year by panels. He had him about 15 metres lateral. If he gets it, we're telling a different story right now.
Kingy, I want to ask you about Selwood, Dangerfield and Ablett. I'm actually not sick of talking about them because I'm interested how they're going to mix throughout the year. And I saw some stats yesterday that Selwood was 98-2 midfield forward and then I think Ablett was 92-8, so predominantly midfield. And then Dangerfield, you know better than me, roughly 50-50, maybe 60-40 or thereabouts. What is the perfect mix for the Cats?
Well, I'll tell you what the perfect mix for the Cats is if they can get Tom Hawkins into form. Because then it doesn't really matter what Dangerfield does forward of centre. It really doesn't. I mean, Radaglia, whilst he's not even a name at Geelong yet, was a big out yesterday. He's been very impressive through the pre-season. He comes big at the ball. When the ball arrives, he's full-chested and long-armed at the arrival time. And that can't be said for Tommy Hawkins at the moment. I think the problem for Geelong is that Dangerfield not only has to play forward, but he has to impact when he goes forward. So, you know, these three, we know what they are. I mean, Selwood and Dangerfield have been the best two clearance players in the comp in the last couple of years. And Ablett's been the best centre bounce clearance player in the comp. So they're going to win their clearances. But when you look at the Hawks, and I think this is the talking point that's sneaking under the guard of most people, they kicked 68 points from stoppages yesterday. 68 points.
That's a lot.
That's the most that they've kicked from clearances since round 7 of 2014.
Gee.
So that just shows you how well they went yesterday.
Tommy Mitchell.
It shows you that there's been a drastic shift in what they're about.
It was a very interesting game from the Hawks. They were able to score a lot. I imagine a lot of that had to do with Geelong's defence. No Taylor, no Henderson at the MCG, where we know they don't play too well, Kingy. What's your view on the Cats defensively? Are they going to continue to struggle, or is this more a personnel and location issue?
Yeah, well, there's some unhealthy profiles with the Cats. I mean, they've kicked 18 goals yesterday from 43 entries. It's the same as last week. I mean, their scoring rate once they go in is unsustainable. It's off the charts. So that's a little asterisk. You can say that's fantastic and take the positive, or you can say if this continues, they're going to drop some games that they shouldn't. And they allowed 62 inside 50s at the other end. So there's a real problem there. There's no doubt about that. And I think when you compare the two defensively yesterday, the Hawks forced Geelong to retreat in that first half 60, 80, 90 metres on occasions. And it was frightening what they were able to do through their organisation. It's been turned to cluster by Jared Healy. It was in full swing yesterday. But the Cats had some holes and they leaked a little bit. And that can happen with young players in there. They're going to have to ride this out for a while. This is not going to change in the short term. Certainly not until the Harry Taylor gets back and maybe they can get some midfielders to half back just to really settle things down. But to be honest, this is what happens when you lose Lonigan, Enright and Mackey in a short space of time.
Well, we've had a 2-year hiatus from Hawthorn Flags, Kingy, and it's been a wonderful 2 years, it has to be said. But after
says the Geelong fan,
what happened after what we've seen against Collingwood and what we saw against Geelong yesterday, if they can continue this style, is there any reason why they can't be at the pointy end of the season come September?
Nah, I think we've all forgotten how good the man in the coach's box is.
Yep.
I mean, they've gone through a six-week rebuild. Most clubs take 6 years. I mean, it's been frightening. The talk about Mitchell and O'Meara and what they paid for them initially with the first-round draft selections, it's going to turn out to be an absolute bargain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to give up, I think it was pick 14 for Mitchell, the first-round pick for O'Meara. But people scoffed at what Alistair Clarkson was doing. But they're going to build a midfield around those two whilst the other stars stay where they should. Players like Rioli. The newcomer in there is Jarman Impey, being able to go midfield and forward. Isaac Smith will stay on the wing. Everything works around who they recruit, and they've done it again.
I feel like they're maximising their window really well. They looked at that last year and thought, no, we were better than our record showed by the end of the season. And it also makes me question whether they should have gone harder in the most recent trade period. They were really quiet other than getting Impey in, and we saw how good he was yesterday. But if they'd have done a little bit more, they could even be a bigger chance of winning the flag this year.
They started last year 0-4 and the last two losses at 0-4 were by 86 points to the Gold Coast and Geelong.
Yes.
So in a 20-game span, they've been able to turn an 86-point loss into a one-point win. I mean, everything they do down there is done well. And they're the envy of every club in the competition, and I just think yesterday highlights why again.
Final one, Kingy, before we let you go. You mentioned Tim Kelly just beforehand. What is it about Tim that you've seen in the first couple of rounds that makes you think that he'll be rewarded with the best first-year player?
Well, I want you to go, Benny, and get some vision of a young Daniel Wells.
Yes.
He runs exactly the same as Tim Kelly. He's got that precision by foot where the ball's flat, yet it's not a bullet. It's just a markable type kick. He always gets the ball in the corridor. He's always a dangerous proposition once the ball is in his hands. He's an elite decision maker, and he wants the footy. He wants the ball. He wants the impact. And I just think this kid's going to have an amazing impact on this midfield. Throw Duncan back in there. The Cats, I don't care what the Cats do. They're going to be the most watchable side for 2018. There's no doubt about that.
Good stuff, Kingy. You're always watchable on AFL 360.
Great
and
work,
the,
Kingy.
The new Saturday scoreboard as well. We're doing a fine job co-hosting there with Sarah Jones. Looking forward to that. Enjoy your day, and thanks for your time on the Fox Footy podcast.
Cheers, lads.
Dual Premiership Kangaroo David King joining us on the Fox Footy podcast. Let's move on to the carnage that was Saturday afternoon, Tom. And you were down at the MCG for Collingwood.
I was.
And GWS. That was, that as a boundary rider, that's about as busy as it gets that that afternoon, trying to keep on top of all those injuries.
Well, Tim Broomhead broke his leg in a sickening incident. His left leg, but I think his fibula, tibia, or whatever the two
bones
are.
Two bones.
And they put him on the green stick, and he went off to hospital, which was shocking, Epworth Hospital. And then about 5 minutes later, Tom Scully fractured his ankle. And they had to find another stretcher, because at that moment, Tim Broomhead was still on the stretcher. They had to find another ambulance. And he went off to hospital as well with a fractured ankle. And then Darcy Moore did his hamstring.
Yeah.
And there was a couple of other things as well that went on. Zach Langdon for GWS, his left pinky finger. It was just injury after injury, but the two main ones were Broomhead and Scully. And then Darcy Moore to go down for Collingwood meant they had two on the bench for the second half. It was remarkable, Max. They even got close to the Pies, given that they had two men on the bench.
And to be fair, Collingwood plays well against GWS. They always have. They seem to sort of have something against that game plan. So in a way, it was the most Collingwood thing they could do to be disappointing and then go into a GWS game and overperform.
Which, Collingwoody after the Richmondy?
And then the most Collingwoody thing would be for them to, on this Friday night, go to face Carlton and lose.
It wouldn't have ever.
That is huge.
I do feel sorry for Bucks in these situations. His forward line is decimated. There's no one who can kick goals for him there, and he's relying on Mason Cox and Ben Reid to come back in and provide, and I quote, structure. I'm sorry. Structure's fine.
They can be support beams, maybe, but structure.
You can still have an ugly office space in a really nicely built office building. You know, you need to be able to kick goals, and you need some substance. And without Degoe and Elliott and Wells, you've actually got no class forward of centre, and you are relying so heavily on Pendlebury, who only attended six centre bounces anyway.
Yeah,
they're playing him off half back, which is really interesting.
I like his boys off half back.
So do I, but I just think you've got to rest him forward. If you're going to play midfield forward, because especially at the moment, the Pies have no one else who's going to kick goals for them.
Why isn't Sidebottom playing more forward? We talked about this preseason a little bit as well, how good he is at ground ball level. Kicked 10 in that TAC Cup grand final a while back. Throw him forward. Give him an opportunity.
Well, I think they need him in the midfield because Pendlebury's not. My view is, in today's game, you need your best players kicking goals forward.
Yeah.
And you don't hide them at half back. I say hide them at half back. It's important to have good ball users, but who's he kicking to?
Their problem has never been getting the ball. Well, the problem has been getting the ball to the forward line in a sense, but not as much as it has been scoring goals once they get it there.
Yeah,
so they're not solving their biggest problem with their best player.
A team that doesn't have a lot of problems at the moment is Port Adelaide, who were outstanding against the Swans on Sunday afternoon. One of the most gripping games, and both the last two games of the round, both Port Adelaide, Sydney, and Geelong Hawthorn were just edge of your seat stuff. And to see Parker and Kennedy up against Ollie Wines and Sam Pelpepper in the middle at the SCG when it is such a hard contested game was thrilling to watch. And the Power have got off to a great start, and Ken Hinckley deserves a lot of praise.
That's the creme de la creme, isn't it, there?
Yeah.
Pelpepper, Wines is unbelievable.
Yeah.
He's got a contract. He's one
we haven't
mentioned yet.
Yes.
I mean, I can't see him leaving, but I imagine there'd be some
future
clubs.
Future captain, surely.
Well, future captain and maybe another club. We'll have to wait and see. Yeah. This was a game of footy that had everything. And to me, it looked like, I think Kane Corns tweeted it, and he would know, two top four clubs, didn't it?
It was fierce.
It was skillful. It was quick. You had to be super sharp with your hands. And it was also very entertaining, which you can't say about every game at the moment. But that was really, really good.
I'm seeing a lot of similarities between last year and this year already.
Yeah.
So no one wanted to tip Port Adelaide to rise up the ladder last year. Everyone thought, oh, they'll stay around 10th or 11th, or they'll drop back. Up they go. They win 14 games, and they have a really good percentage.
They've got good players. We've spoken about before having guns. They've just got a lot of really good players. And the guys they've brought in, I love this attitude. Don't go to the draft every year. Go and find guns at other clubs and bring them to your club and assimilate them and win games of footy.
You know what they did in rounds 1 and 2 last year? They thumped Fremantle and beat Sydney at the SCG. What have they done this year? They've thumped Fremantle and beat Sydney at the SCG. This is a better Sydney team, so this is a more impressive win. But Port Adelaide, for me, was a top four team going into this season. The question was whether Ken Hinckley could get them to actually play like that. They clearly have the talent to do so. Yep. And based on what we've seen so far, they are and they can.
And I still rate Hinckley, Benny. I've got a long memory, and 2013, 14. Well, 13 was good, but 2014, especially when they lost by a kick or so to Hawthorn at the G, I think Hinckley is still a very, very good coach, and I think the players still back him to the absolute hilt.
Well, they take on Brisbane at the Adelaide Oval this weekend, so that'll be an interesting contest for the young Lions, who are doing okay without winning any games at the moment. We touched on Friday night's game a little bit earlier. 17th v 16th, Carlton v Collingwood. These games in past couple of years, there hasn't been a lot of excitement around them, even though they are the traditional rivals.
Yeah.
But there is a genuine expectation ahead of this Friday night game. And considering, Maxi, that the Blues won by 23 points when the two teams met last year, there's a lot of pressure on Bucks and the Pies.
Yeah, and the Blues have won two of their last three against Collingwood, so they've done all right despite being a bit of a shambles as of late. I could very much see either team winning. Carlton did not look good against Gold Coast at all.
Nope.
But then at the same time, when Tom Lynch is playing like that, he was clearly the best player on the ground. So what are you going to do? Liam Jones, the dream going away a little bit there.
A little bit. I mean, Tom Lynch is so good, it's hard to actually understand. Did Liam Jones make mistakes, or was Tom Lynch just playing out of his skin?
Both. But I think the guys, the analysts, particularly Kingy in the office, and then the guys at the ground as well, were big on Tom Lynch giving... Liam Jones giving Tom Lynch not enough respect at all, playing so far in front of him, and the Suns easily just kicking it over Jones's head.
Yeah, this Liam Jones is a really good defender. I wonder if they could throw him forward.
Can of worms officially open there, Maxi. Speaking of the Suns, they take on the Dockers in their home game at Optus Stadium this weekend. They might win this home game, though.
Question mark. True or false? This is the first time a Queensland side has hosted a West Australian side in Western Australia
this
competition.
Yeah, true.
False.
False?
Go on.
The Brisbane Bears hosted West Coast at the Wacker in 1988.
1988?
The Wacker. Yeah.
Yes.
Was it a bouncy deck?
You would know more than me.
No. So show back to off the long run.
Yes.
There's a funny one there. Very much Gold Coast could win. Having said that, I have been very down on Fremantle going into this season, and they could win this. For sure. They looked really good against Essendon.
I love the way they played four debutants in two rounds.
Yeah. Un-Ross-like, isn't it?
Ross needs to do this, and it's so late that he's done it, and his coaching tenure might depend on it, but finally he's bitten the bullet.
Yeah.
You looked at that team after round one. They still had five players over the age of 30. What are you doing having five players over the age of 30? I know you need the veterans at some point to teach the young kids, but that was too many.
Well, you've got to look at who the five are.
Well, Daniel Pearce was one that went out and was replaced by a debutant.
Well, why he was playing in round one, I'm not sure.
That seems perfect to me.
I remember when he was a rising star, Ben.
Yes.
It makes me feel old.
It's a long time ago, Thomas.
06 or thereabouts?
Long time. When you were sort of in your prime at Melbourne Grammar there.
Melbourne
and North Melbourne is a fascinating contest. The Roos have won 17 straight against Melbourne.
You know how hard it is to count in AFL tables when there's so many L's in a row?
All our listeners know that. Yeah.
Four. What do you think the longest ever streak, without looking at that, I have it written down, in history? It is Collingwood against Hawthorn, 1925 to 1941. The Magpies won 29 straight against the Hawks.
16 years of dominance.
Jock McHale.
Yes.
So they've got a way to go there. But the next longest active is 11. Geelong over the Dogs and Richmond over Brisbane.
So Collingwood were successful well before the Depression into World War II.
During.
You know what? Nathan Jones was playing, I think, his fourth game the last time Melbourne beat North Melbourne.
Wow.
It's a serious streak that Melbourne needs to put right. If you remember all the monkeys they had on their back, the Demons, they had Etihad Stadium. They fixed that against GWS late a couple of years ago. They had St Kilda. They fixed that last year. This North Melbourne one is the second last one. Third last one. Then they got finals and the grand final.
It should be the easiest one, too.
Well, it absolutely should be. That's what we thought the last 6 years, but it hasn't been, has it?
Two games last year.
Yeah.
Haven't they lost 2 years in a row against North because of the wind?
The one at the MCG last year was just ridiculous.
Remember when Sydney and GWS used to be called the Battle of the Bridge?
I love the Battle of the Bridge.
Oh, they were the days.
What's this one?
It's Sydney Derby.
It's just the Derby.
Just the Sydney Derby. GWS have won three straight, Maxi, before Sydney's Round 17 2017. I mean, this is going to be a really fascinating contest.
Yeah, really good game for me. Two top four sides again. Either team could win this one. I think injuries will determine this. Selection will determine this a lot. Yeah. Sydney, you'd like to win because that as much as we credited Port, it's a little bit disappointing for Sydney to be losing a game like that to another contender at the SCG. They sort of want to have that as their little fortress.
What I like is it's April and they've already played each other twice this season, yes. Once in the JLT and once as another practice match. They know each other pretty well up in Sydney.
I reckon they would as well. Richmond and Hawthorn on Sunday, particularly after the Hawks' really impressive fortnight up against the Tigers, who maybe, I don't know if a reality check is the right word, but they were certainly the favourites going into that game against Adelaide, and the Crows were super impressive on that Thursday night game. The Tigers won last year by 29 points, mate.
Yeah, you wonder if that game was sort of just a reversion to the mean of that sort of what a lot of people expected going into the grand final when Adelaide were favourites. So maybe if the grand final was played at the Adelaide Oval, and maybe if Tex Walker decided to appear at the grand final, that's what would have happened.
Too soon.
But instead, that's what happened, and the Tigers won the flag. So Adelaide just looked like the better team, and they played the scenario really well. But Richmond Hawthorn, tough to tip. I think Richmond should win that, but
It'll be very interesting to see whether Richmond go 1-2. The reigning premiers 1-2 is always interesting. They'll be 2-2 because they play Brisbane after that.
1-11 straight.
Yeah, but then they play Melbourne on the Anzac Day Eve.
Oh,
so,
huge.
Yeah, but every game is difficult. Again. And even though Richmond are the reigning premiers, and they're not the dominant team that we're used to in the Hawthorn era as being reigning premiers.
Yeah.
And this is a very losable game for them.
Yep.
Final game of the round, West Coast Geelong.
Another great game.
Yeah, absolutely. Do we...
The Mitchell White Cup?
Oh, the Mitchell White Cup. That's very good from you there, Thomas. What about the Eagles? They obviously beat the Dogs. The Dogs were probably the story to come out of that game, but despite how disappointing they were. But the Eagles showed some good signs. Flying Ryan Liam was fantastic at Etihad. The reason why the roof was left open on Sunday afternoon. Are they a chance here against the Cats?
I think they're a huge chance, particularly over there. The home sides won the last four encounters between these teams, whether they're at Subi or Cadinia Park. I've rated the Eagles coming into this season. I think Nick Nat's importance cannot be understated. And I think the fact that their midfield was already terrible last year and they played finals shows it's fine for this year, because they were I think in between the 50-metre arcs in the centre, they were the 17th best contested possession team last year, only above Brisbane. Yep. Terrible at such a core facet of the game, made the eight. Nick Nat comes in, so they're not losing that much from the midfield, even with Mitchell and Pritis going out. This is still a very good team, and the more Nick Nat plays, the better they're going to be. And Geelong travelling, still have to make that trip, which is a tough one. Well, it was for Essendon at the very least.
Yeah. 6 days break between the Geelong-Hawthorn game and the West Coast Geelong game. And not just 6 days between games, but Geelong and Hawthorn, as you know, because you both watched it, and as many of our listeners would know, played out to the very end. It was quick and it was brutal, and there were injuries. Geelong had three on the bench for the second half with that concussion to Jack Henry, the debutant. This is a serious, tough task, but pretty much just based on the recovery. And Chris Scott won't use it as an excuse, but the fact that it's 6 days after such a brutal game makes this a really, really difficult gig for them.
Yeah, it does. And you mentioned the ruck just then, Maxie. That's probably been a weakness of Geelong over the first couple of weeks. They didn't play Zach Smith yesterday, and Ben McAvoy was arguably the best player on the ground at halftime for the Hawks.
Yes, I'd say he was probably easily in the votes for the match. And Zach Smith, for me, is the player between those two, Smith and Reece Stanley. So. Yeah. It's an interesting sort of thing. Chris Scott saying on AFL 360 that he likes playing one at the moment. He doesn't want to play the two ruckman.
Yeah.
You understand that, but when Stanley's not in form, it does help them have them struggle a little
bit. Neither's in form. That's the problem.
No.
Yeah. They don't know who the better ruckman is because neither are playing good footy.
Bring back Mark Blake, I say.
Yes.
Yeah, Maxie. Premiership player, Mark
that's
Blake.
What Stephen King or Brad Ottens would go down.
Yes, absolutely. Gentlemen, that's been a glorious return of the
Sam
Fox Footy podcast.
Kent Kingsley pinch hit.
Oh, what a full 40 was. The glorious return of the Fox Footy podcast. Well done, gents. Thanks for coming on board for the episode one in 2018. We'll be back next week. But always make sure you keep clicking back to foxfooty.com.au.